you guys, it's time once again for yet another movie retrospective. Going back to the 80s this time around, not exactly a cult film that we're talking about today because it was kind of like a really big commercial success and is still kind of considered a classic of the horror genre. This is Poltergeist from 1982.
Yeah, you've seen this one a million times. If you haven't seen this movie, go ahead and unsub. Fuck out of here.
He's always telling that. Get the fuck out of here.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Get the fuck off our channel. Yeah.
No, it's understandable. You know, if you're young, you know, if you're a young person that maybe hadn't seen Poltergeist.
Well, yeah, like I said, they have a lot to catch up on.
Yeah. Poltergeist would be kind of like an old played out movie if you were in your 20s. Like, why would I want to watch that thing?
Yeah.
We watched it again recently to do this review. Yeah. And that movie's held up.
It really has.
It's held up in
a way that, you know, a lot of movies from the 80s have held up pretty good, I think, and we've kind of talked about some of the other ones on the show, but I really do think this one has held up pretty well. The special effects still look pretty good.
Still look pretty good, yeah.
You know, it's the characters, it still looks pretty good. It doesn't look horribly, horribly dated.
No CG, it was all practical effects. There's a
pretty much, except for like the weird like lighting effects and stuff.
Yeah. But that's still a practical effect. Yeah. There's no CG in it.
Yeah.
And then there was one real epic shot where some kind of a poltergeist light is coming down the stairways and just all these shadows are being cast on the walls from the railings and the, you know what I mean, from the railings and on the staircase, and you can see the thing. And I was seeing it and I was going, man, how'd they do that back then? You know, it was some kind of light that was coming down on a wire and it was casting all these shadows over the room, and then they somehow like superimposed some kind of a animated graphic over the light source itself. But it looked cool. It looked pretty cool. I liked it.
Yeah, pretty much everything in this looked pretty cool. Now, let's talk a little bit about this movie. Came out the summer of 1982, and it was actually, supposedly, and I'm going to get into this in a second, directed by Tobe Hooper, who directed a lot of stuff, but is probably most famous for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. However, the movie was written and produced by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about it is, okay, Steven Spielberg was working on E.T. the Extraterrestrial at the time. And in fact, the two movies came out about a week or 2 weeks apart in the summer of 1982. Now, there was
It's amazing that you say that. I was there, and it seemed like there's a big gap in between those two movies. But I guess you're right.
Yeah, they both came out the same way.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't remember if I saw Poltergeist in the theater. I may have. I know I saw E.T. in the theater, and it's very possible that we might have seen Poltergeist in the theater too, like a week or two later.
Yeah.
But I'm not super sure. I might have seen it later on cable.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the fact that Steven Spielberg was working on E.T. at the same time that Poltergeist was going on, there was something in his contract that said, you know, you're not allowed to direct another movie while you're working on E.T., you know, that was a contractual obligation. So he apparently was a fan of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so he asked Tobe Hooper to do it. Now, over the years, there has been a lot of controversy over whether Steven Spielberg actually did direct the movie on the sly, and Tobe Hooper was kind of just like there on the set. Like, there's controversy over how much contribution that Tobe Hooper
had. Toby may have been a figurehead.
Yeah.
The actual director may have been.
And like I said, there's really no way of determining, because you get some of the actors saying, yeah, Tobe Hooper was totally the director. You know, he blocked the actors. He set up the shots. He did all this other stuff. Now, everybody did say Steven Spielberg was, you know, he was the producer. He did write the shit. And he was on set, like, pretty much every day. And most of the decisions had to be run through him as well as Tobe Hooper. And he would kind of, like, do finalized stuff. He did some of the storyboarding and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, like I said, there's different actors say different things and different people that were on the set say different things. It's like, nobody's saying that Tobe Hooper didn't, you know, kind of direct it, because he did. He was there every day and he did like directorial things. They just don't, you know, no one's really in agreement over how much control Steven Spielberg had over the way the final movie turned out.
It could be that because things had to be to Spielberg's standard, and he was the guy that would say what would go and what wouldn't go.
It does seem
and then,
kind of
and
like
then
that.
Him kind of influencing the edit, that what you end up with is a Steven Spielberg movie.
It is, but yeah.
Because you watch it, and it just feels so much like Spielberg. Just every aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, he did write it, so there is that. Now, I do feel like Tobe Hooper's influence can be felt, particularly in the more horror type elements, like, you know, the corpses in the pool and the guy tearing his face off and all that. I mean, that's all Hooper, obviously. Right,
so he may have had that aspect of the input.
And it should be noted, too, that the initial idea for this movie that Steven Spielberg came up with, it was supposed to be sci-fi. It was supposed to be kind of like a more horror-oriented sequel to Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It was supposed to be called Dark Skies. Now, when Tobe Hooper came on to direct it, he's like, I don't really want to do a sci-fi movie. Can we do a ghost story or like a horror story, you know, that's more like a ghost story instead? And so Steven Spielberg said, okay, we can do that. So Hooper did have that much control over the way the story went. I see what you're talking
about. You could take E.T., Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and Poltergeist and put them all right there in that same package. It's that same tone.
Yeah.
You know. And it does have a mom, apple pie, and Chevrolet all-American feel to it.
Yeah.
That's the way America felt when we were kids.
Yeah.
It doesn't really feel that way now. It's hard to recapture that time. I don't know if it was just the aesthetic of the furniture and the music and the way upper middle class neighborhoods looked at that time, the architecture. I don't know. Although, didn't we say that we saw a movie recently and the way it was shot, the neighborhood shot? Yeah, we saw that Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
And the way they shot that Japanese
The 2014 house, one, right?
2000, yeah. The way they shot that Japanese upper middle class neighborhood with the Japanese houses with the gardens out in front of it. It looked just like something out of E.T. or Close Encounters, or something Spielbergian. So it may have something to do with the way the camera moves and the way the soundtrack in the back is, the score. I don't know. There's something about it. You can get that old school kind of American middle class Spielberg tone. If you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I that was why the whole controversy erupted after the movie came out, because they said that feels like a Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Spielberg was very big on these kind of upper middle class, nuclear family type things that were immediately, if not necessarily relatable, at least they were immediately likable. You know, you could kind of see where they were coming from. Like,
they were idealized.
You got very invested in them, you know, immediately. They were, you know, like I said, they were very likable characters. You know, and so when they were put in peril, you would feel for them.
Yeah, my family, you know, my mother had been divorced at this time. So I was in the single parent, single mom situation.
Yeah.
But still, when I saw those movies, I saw the American upper middle class family, nuclear family, like you're talking about. And to me, that was normal.
Yeah. Well, and to a lot of people, I think to kind of our whole generation.
Yeah, even though I wasn't in that situation, I didn't realize I wasn't in that situation.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was weird. So I think everyone could relate to it.
Yeah, it's weird because even though,
like
me and most people I knew, were not in that type of family situation, in a way, like you saw it in a Spielberg movie and you're like, that's the way it's supposed to be.
That's
kind of like his greatest talent, I think, is like kind of taking this very specific type of family structure, this very specific type of like class structure, and making it relatable to everyone pretty much. You know, and like I said, making it to a thing where it's likable and you're just like really into these characters.
Yeah.
So, if you haven't seen Poltergeist, which what the fuck, everybody's seen Poltergeist. This was actually filmed in a real neighborhood in Simi Valley, California. And it's in the movie, it's supposedly this new like development called Cuesta Verde. And the guy, the Freeling family.
Yeah.
And they have... I don't know how long they've been living in this house. It doesn't seem like they've been living in it all that long. But the dad, you know, he works for the real estate development company that kind of did it and everything like that. Now, like I said, we don't know how long this family has been living here.
Yeah.
But pretty much only a few scenes into the movie, crazy shit starts to happen in the house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
it
you know what?
It ramps up very quickly. Much more quickly than I remembered.
I remembered what it was I was trying to remember. There was a movie that recaptured that feeling. It was Bumblebee. And that was another one that that Spielberg was involved in.
Yeah. I think he had a producer credit on that.
Yeah. That that 80s middle class home structure was right there in Bumblebee, and I was like, oh wow, it's like one of the, like an old Spielberg flick.
Well, like I said, they a lot of those have been coming out lately, probably because of the huge success of Stranger Things, which you know, looks very much like a Steven Spielberg, you know, like a dark E.T. Goonies type of movie.
I think America, you know, overall kind of yearns back for those days too. There was a certain amount of security in that imagery, even if you weren't involved in that.
Yeah.
You know, there's something about seeing a movie with that in it. You know what
I
mean?
Well, I think, too, it was kind of like how generations before us, like, look back to the 50s. Like, yeah. It was like if it was this...
yeah, maybe. Like an idyllic time period.
Yeah, like the little house with the...
Which it was fun. It was fun. Like that. It was fun. We were there.
Yeah.
It wasn't perfect, but it was fun.
Some of it wasn't fun. I mean, you know what I mean. But
you couldn't get anything cool. No cool computer technology. There's no internet, you know.
But yeah. So, like I said, I had seen this movie like 40 bajillion times when I was growing up. And I hadn't seen it for quite a long time, but I remembered it. You know, I've seen it on and off like over the years. Now, we watched it again because I think Netflix just added it or somebody did. Netflix or Shudder just added it. So we just said, what the hell?
It was Shudder.
Yeah, so we watched
it. But we're plugging the fuck out of Shudder. Shudder needs to pay us.
So we watched it again the other day. And I remembered most of it. There were some of it I hadn't remembered. And one thing that I hadn't remembered was how quickly, like, shit starts to go south, right? Yeah. It's like I said, this family's living in this house. Nothing weird has happened. There's a little blonde Moppet, like Carol Ann, and her little birdie dies. And they have a little birdie funeral. And she's super cute and everything like that. And then, basically, a couple hours later, like, in real time... You know, she's talking to the TV, you know, the chairs in the kitchen are rearranging themselves, like the fucking silverware is like bending, like fucking Uri Geller is in the shit.
Yeah, they kind of took a phenomenon from all across all paranormal reports and tried to put it all into one case. I mean, extra dimensional stuff, Uri Geller spoon bending and fork bending. Yeah, I actually have seen real poltergeist and really only the scene with the chairs being rearranged actually struck me as like, yeah, that's what it's like.
That scene freaked me the fuck out when I was a kid. Like, even more than the other shit. I mean, some of the other scenes were scary too, like especially when I was a kid. But, you know, especially with the clown and everything. Everybody talks about the clown scene. But for some reason, just that scene where Carol Ann's just sitting there in the kitchen and her mom like bends down to get some shit out of the cabinet and all of a sudden, chi-chong, like all the chairs are like stacked all over that, freaked me the fuck out.
The whole thing with the toys flying in the, in, you know, flying around through the air and it wasn't like that. Boy, but when the doors were shut, it made you think that was going on in there, but no. No, the only thing
maybe it would have been if you could have opened. I don't think so.
The only thing that really kind of reminded me of Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist was, you know, you turn your back on something, you turn around, it's different. Like the chair scene.
Yeah.
That, you might see something thrown at you from a direction where you weren't looking at. There was nobody there to throw it, but you know, like that.
But one of the things I liked about this is that, you know, at first, like most people probably would. I mean, this is a very This couple, you know, Stephen and Diane Freeling, the mom and dad, they seem like kind of laid back, sort of, you know, they used to be hippies and shit. You know, they're smoking pot and everything like that in their room. So poltergeist shit starts happening in the house. It doesn't seem dangerous. Like, it's kind of creepy and stuff like that. So initially, the mom, she just thinks it's kind of neat. So she's home one day and she's like putting Caroline on the floor and Caroline's getting pulled across by some force or some shit like that. She puts a little helmet on her and everything and she's like, when her husband comes home, she's like, check this shit out. It's so awesome. And
I can relate to that, though. Me and Lois kind of thought
it was
neat.
That's what I mean. That's what I liked about it.
We thought it was neat during the day. But when it got dark and at night, we didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. Like,
felt like it was watching you.
Yeah. I liked that they had that aspect of it where if that shit, like if the chairs rearranged it, like you probably shit your pants. But then you'd be like, let's see if it does it again. See if it does it again.
You try to figure it out.
You would try to figure it out. And that's exactly what she did. Like her and her daughter, they were trying to like figure out what was going on. Yeah. So at first they just thought it was kind of neat. But then I think it was like that night, like a couple hours later, like after the whole chair incident, when they still thought it was neat. And then the kid, Robbie, gets sucked out of the window by the evil tree. And now the tree is like going to eat him.
If you ask me, the whole chair thing and trying to figure it out, you know, we live that life. And that checks out with us. I think what happened was Spielberg read "This House is Haunted" by Guy and Lion Playfield.
He might have.
That's the Enfield case, because that's what naturally would happen. Objects move, and you try to figure out, well, what is this?
Yeah.
And you try to debunk it to yourself, you know.
I heard that one of the poltergeist cases that actually was the inspiration for this was actually Popper the Poltergeist.
It
happened
that
in Long Island.
Okay.
Before Amityville. I think it happened in like the 60s or the 70s. I can't remember when. But there was a lot of shit going on in that. But the most common manifestation was like bottles with like their caps would pop off.
Right.
And like shit would come flying out of the bottles. Like all different kind of bottles around the house. And I think that was kind of one of the inspirations for this also. Because that was kind of a really big famous case at the time, even though it was kind of forgotten after all the Amityville shit happened in the same place. But, yeah, so, you know, as cool as it was the first day with the chairs and everything, then suddenly Robbie gets eaten by a tree, and then Carol Ann gets sucked into the TV or sucked into the closet or whatever by the, you know, whatever it is that's haunting this house. They do call this they do call this poltergeist, even though it ends up being ghosts. Really.
Yeah, haunting.
I mean.
It ends up being
ghosts. At first it seems very poltergeisty, but.
Yeah, and in case if you're not a regular listener, we've done many shows in the past and she's written books on it. There is a difference in haunting phenomenon and poltergeist phenomenon. There is some crossover in some cases, but. They're two very different phenomena.
Yeah, yeah. So, like I said, and now the first thing they do, and this kind of cracks me up too. Like, you know, bad shit happens. Carol Ann gets sucked into the closet or into the other dimension or whatever. They call some parapsychologists to come there. And by the time the parapsychologists get there, the phenomena has become so blasé that the family are just kind of like, I love that scene where they're all sitting around the table with the parapsychologists, and then the fucking coffee pot or whatever like slides across the table by itself, and the family's just like, meh, whatever.
Yeah.
And then like the light goes, and then the guy's like trying to take a picture, and she's like, oh, we got to be quicker than that around here. You know what I mean? They're just like so.
And they'd be like, oh, it's gonna do it again.
Yeah, they're just like so laissez-faire about it, like whatever, it's just doing it all the time now. And meanwhile, the parapsychologists are like flipping the fuck out. So they come there, and I think that the parapsychologist being there, this was like my favorite scene. And when I was really little, like, you know, when I was like 11 years old and I was watching this movie, the scene where the one parapsychologist guy like tears his own face off.
Yeah.
That really bothered me.
Yeah, even though it was just a hallucination. He had imagined that he didn't really tear his face off.
But I mean, the whole sequence where, you know, he's evidently, I guess they said, hey, take whatever you want out of the fridge. And he's like, cha-ching, I'm going in there, score. So he goes in there, he's got like a chicken leg in his mouth. And he's like, hey, I'm going to cook this steak. I'm going to do this and that and the other. And then the steak like starts like scooting across the fucking kitchen counter and then like spewing crap everywhere, and then it's got maggots on it.
Yeah.
Or the chicken has maggots on it. And then he's like, hey, I'm going to go in the bathroom and start tearing little gobbets of flesh off my face.
I didn't see this in a theater. I saw it, I think, in HBO after it had been out.
I think I did
time.
Too, yeah. And it was, so it was probably like a year or two.
Yeah, and this was after I'd had my own experience. I mean, there were parts of the movie, especially in the beginning, that I was like, yeah, man, that's what I saw. But then as it ramped up, it got more and more, you know, Hollywood. You know what I mean? It's not that fucking intense. You know what I mean? And then some of the shit that it did was just, you know, something you'd see from like a Ed and Lorraine Warren case, you know. But it was still a good movie, you know what I mean?
It is. It's not terribly believable, but a lot of horror movies aren't, you know what I mean?
It's entertainment.
Kind of over the top.
It's entertainment.
But I have to say, and now here's another thing that I hadn't remembered from, you know, the last time I saw this movie, which was probably many years ago, till we just watched it like the other day. I remembered the very famous scene of the fucking clown doll, which why the hell would you give that to your children? I mean, come on. That's like Nightmare
Fuel
right there. You wouldn't give a life-size clown doll. It's like, hey, I'm going to sit this right at the end of your bed so it stares at you while you sleep. You know what I mean? So it's sitting there, and then Robbie's like looking at it going, fuck this shit. I can't go to sleep with that. And he tries to throw the blanket over it and shit. And then like he tries to go to sleep, and then he looks back, and the clown is gone. And then he's like looking under the thing, and then it comes up behind him like, run! Like, you know, and it scared the shit out of everybody. One of the best jump scares in horror history.
Another thing that was awesome was his toys. I'm looking at his toys. And man, I had that. He, you know what I mean? The Darth Vader action figure carrying case.
Yeah, with all the where you put all the figures in it.
Yeah, and the Empire Strikes Back little medical droid with all the little arms and the
and
the Han Solo Hoth edition. Yeah. He had all the cool shit.
Yeah, I had the Han Solo.
Yeah,
Hoth.
I had all those.
We had the Hoth playset, and we had it came with the little Han Solo with the blue coat and the little Tauntaun.
Yeah.
And the little Tauntaun's little belly opened.
I had so much of that shit. I had like eight. I had like eight of the Stormtroopers and like five or six of the Death Star guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then like everything else. I had almost all of them for a while.
My favorite was the Imperial Guards, like those little red guys.
I didn't have those.
Yeah, I like them. So it's like their heads were plastic. I mean, they were all plastic, obviously, but then they had like a little cloth cape, and they were like
by the time Return of the Jedi came out, I was kind of out of the action figures. It was just Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. I was almost too old for them by the time Return of the Jedi came out.
Yeah.
I'd look at them, I'd like them, but I'd never really bought any of them. You know?
Yeah. But the thing that I hadn't remembered was that, you know, after the parapsychologists, like, come in there and be like, you know, they filmed all this shit that happened, and they're like, okay, well, we just proved ghosts, like, forever, Nobel Prize for us.
Yeah.
They didn't say that, but they should have in real life. But, you know, then they're like, we can't do anything about this, we have to call the spirit medium, who's, you know, Tangina, or however you pronounce her name, Zelda Rubinstein. Is the actor's name, and she comes in very famously, and you know, she is actually a real psychic. She can like read your thoughts and shit.
Yeah.
And she thinks she clears the house, you know, after Carol Ann gets sucked out, and then, you know, the mom has to go in through the closet with the rope, and the dad almost fucks it up because she says, don't pull on the rope, and then he pulls on the rope like a dumbass because he can't listen. but you know what I mean? Like, the mom and the kid are fine, they're all covered with goop and whatever. But I had remembered the clown scene with Robbie happening like earlier in the movie, but it doesn't happen until after Tangina says the house is clean and everybody leaves.
Yeah.
And then the Freelings are like, okay, well, even though the house is supposedly clean, we're still getting the fuck out of Dodge.
And it makes a comeback. Yeah.
And then they're going to move. And then like the night before, like they're going to move like the next day because they're packing up the truck and shit like that.
Yeah.
And then they're just waiting for the dad to come back from work because he's going to go to work and tell him, you know, fuck you, I quit because you only move the headstones. You know what I mean? So he doesn't say that till later. But you know what I mean? So then he's gone, and then while the mom and the two of the kids are like at home, all fucking hell breaks loose. There's a big fucking ghost dragon in there. There's like fucking, she falls in the pool and there's bodies. There's fucking coffins.
You know
popping
she's
up
had.
Everywhere.
You know she's had a lot of vodka when she starts saying fucking like seven times in one sentence.
What are you talking about? I do that. I do that when I'm sober. It's just, I like it because it provides a nice, like, rhythm, you know what I mean? But yeah, I had forgotten that there was that whole, you know, there was that whole thing, like, after, like, all the parapsychologists and psychics left and were like, yeah, everything's fine now. And then all of a sudden they're like, no, it's not fine. And then, like, all this crazy shit happened. And that's when the clown shit happened. Okay. For some reason, I thought it happened. Like,
no, it was at towards the end that happened.
So
you saw the clown in the middle part to build it up for that to happen.
Yeah.
It was building you up for that.
Because he'd keep looking at that fucking creepy clown. Yeah. And everybody's like, clowns, no. Yeah. So another thing, and like I told you, I don't remember if I told you earlier or not, but this movie was originally, when it went to get, you know, the rating from the MPAA, they originally gave this an R rating. But Steven Spielberg and Tobe Hooper, they were like, no, please, can we please have a PG? Because they didn't have a PG-13 rating until 2 years later. I think it was 84 that they got the PG-13 rating. So they appealed the R rating because they wanted everybody to see it. So the MPA were like, okay. Guy gets his face torn off, corpses, kid getting eaten by a tree. Why not? So they made it a PG.
The R rating and the PG-13 rating were stupid anyway. Yeah. I mean, you can make a badass movie PG-13.
If you know what you're doing.
Yeah, if you know what you're doing. You have to edit just a couple little select front frames.
Well, yeah. It was just kind of like the recent, like, the remake of the Deadpool movie. Where they wanted to see if they could make it PG-13 and make it good.
The R rating was from a time in America's history that most of those people are dead now that wanted that R rating. All right.
Yeah.
They died of old age. Most of it had to do with titties.
Yeah.
That's all I had to do with.
You can pretty much show all the violence you want. But yeah. The second you show, like, titties or veins, that's the end
of the story. Yeah, which is just ridiculous, man.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
That's really dumb. It's like you can show ridiculous. You can show people getting their heads blown off, but show a nipple and everyone just loses their shit.
They had some kind of weird religious thing going on back then. They're all gone, though. Don't have to worry about them.
But yeah, so I guess the PG-13 rating was good because this ended up making like a shit ton of money over the summer. And like I said, it's considered one of the best movies in 1982, probably one of the best horror movies ever made, and I would probably agree with that assessment. Now, I had forgotten completely, but they made a remake of this shit, like in 2015, I want to say.
They did?
2013, 2015.
Of this one?
Of Poltergeist, yes.
Oh, I bet you that was an abomination.
And, like I said, I didn't even know until I was, like, reading the Wikipedia page. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. I didn't know. Yeah. But, like, I knew that they made one of Amityville Horror, which actually wasn't awful. I didn't mind it. You know, it wasn't great.
You're not supposed to... Amityville Horror wasn't great.
The original wasn't all that great. No. So I was just kind of like, all right, I'll allow it. But I didn't see the remake of this. Now,
I wouldn't mess with it.
No, I probably wouldn't. Even though Sam Rockwell is in it and I love him, but you know, I don't know. I'll probably see it one day.
There are certain movies that have to be left alone.
Yeah. I don't know if you could really... You can't capture the tone of this again. No. It's so much a product of its time. I know I say that about a lot of movies.
Imagine if you tried to remake E.T.
I'm sure they're going to at some point. So, So they actually did make two sequels to this, Poltergeist 2, The Other Side, which actually wasn't bad.
Yeah.
I kind of like, it's a little bit cheesy, but you know, I liked the guy that played the cult leader, like Henry Kane. He was super creepy.
Yeah.
The third one that they made was...
I don't even remember that one.
The third one was the one that was in the Chicago high rise. Only yeah. Carol Ann was in it.
It couldn't
Heather
have been.
O'Rourke.
Couldn't have been good.
I didn't like it. Tom Skerritt was in it, yeah. And, you know, I like him. But they didn't get the same actor to play Henry Kane because that guy had passed away because he was old as shit. and it wasn't in the same setting. Like, it was in a city setting, and it was just, I don't know. It was just, the little girl is fine. I loved her, but you know what I mean? The rest of the family wasn't there. The dynamic wasn't there. It wasn't the same kind of movie.
I remember when Poltergeist 2 came out, I kind of enjoyed it, but I was watching it on HBO.
Yeah.
But
part 2 is all right.
Yeah. But you could tell they were pushing it.
Ugh.
You know what I mean? Like that part 2 really shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were kind of like fucking with your ability to suspend disbelief. You know what I'm talking about? It really shouldn't have happened, but you accepted it because it was all right.
The thing that I didn't like...
What was
like,
better was, like, if you want to see Poltergeist again, you just should watch Life Force or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is another crazy fucking movie that was like that.
The thing that bothered me, and maybe I shouldn't complain too much about this, because it is like a fucking ghost story, and, you know, the shit that they found out about the haunting in the first Poltergeist... You know, it came from, like, mediums and parapsychics. Nobody knows about this shit. You know what I mean? So if you're writing a story for the sequel, they're like, well, it's parapsychology. We can just make shit up. Because in the first story, the whole thing was that the evil real estate developers had torn out this huge cemetery to make the thing. And it's like, yeah. We totally moved the cemetery, except for the bodies. We just moved the headstones. You know what I mean? And it's like...
Yeah, which is really implausible because you can't build anything on top of a... cemetery.
I mean, I'm not...
You're going to hit something
when
you dig.
That's what I mean. It just seemed like...
You can't put pipes, you can't put...
There's so much empty space, y'all. Yeah. It's like, you really don't need to, like, disturb...
Wouldn't happen that way in real life, but it looked good on
camera. No, but it looked good on camera. And like I said, the whole end of the movie, like, had all these coffins popping out and, like, people like that. Now, in the second movie, they came out and said, oh, well, no, really, the ghosts were... you know, of this Henry Kane guy who was, like, a cult leader and all his cult followers who were in a cave, like, underneath... the cemetery. So I get it's like a double-decker haunting kind of situation. I guess, which, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
The third one, like I said, was just kind of thing. Now, another thing that I want to mention about this that a lot of people have talked about in regards to Poltergeist is that for a while, some people have thought, and they even remember back when they had that channel E and they had E! True Hollywood Story, that the production of Poltergeist was supposedly cursed. Although, I'm sitting there going, okay, I've heard of the Poltergeist curse because, yes, Heather O'Rourke died at the age of 12 before the third one came out because they had to use a body double in the third one a lot of times.
She was a cute little girl, too.
She was adorable. Yeah. She died of, actually, she had complications from a bowel obstruction. Mm. She died of that. Also, the girl that played Dana, the teenage daughter in the first movie, she was actually murdered by her boyfriend.
Yeah, I remember something about that.
Only a few months after Poltergeist came out.
Yeah.
Like, he strangled her. So, I thought that there was more to it than that. Like, I thought there was more... Because you know how some movies, they're like, oh, this person died on the set, and then this person, like, had some crazy, you know, and there was more crazy shit. But I think the whole thing of the curse, the whole thing I could find about the curse on Wikipedia was just that those two people...
Yeah, and the rest of it was legend.
The two kids died.
Because I remember during the time, you know, back in the 80s, but before you could get your hands on information, because there was no, you know, there was no internet, I thought the little girl had died of some kind of weird leukemia.
No.
It was just a complications of a bowel obstruction.
It was a bowel obstruction. Okay. She was 12 years old.
Okay.
And, yeah, it was weird because in the third one, like I said, if you watch the third one, they're all kind of creepy to watch because you know she's dead now and she didn't live very long. But the third one, she looks ill. You know what I mean? And they actually used, like I said, body doubles for some of the shots. Like, especially there's one near the end where, like, her aunt and uncle are, like, holding on to her and they don't show her face. And you know that that's not really her. But she looked like she had kind of, like, blown up a little bit. Like, she was, like, kind of weird and, like, bloated looking. And I don't know if that was, like, due to her disease or anything like that. But I had totally forgotten about the girl playing Dana getting strangled by her boyfriend. Yeah. And that happened the same year that the movie came out. I think it happened in, like, the movie came out in June, and I think she died in November of that year, of 1982. She was, like, only 16 or 17 years old. And her boyfriend only served, like, 3 fucking years for, like, voluntary manslaughter or something like that.
Well, there might have been more to the story than
For strangling her to death. Yeah. But, yeah, so that was the whole thing about the Poltergeist curse. But, like I said, this is a movie that, much like Ghostbusters... which came out 2 years later.
Yeah, I always associated this movie with Ghostbusters.
They are very similar.
They kind of have similarities to them.
This is probably... I mean, this is easily one of the best horror movies of the 80s. Even though it was a big success, it was a big, you know, big mainstream movie and stuff like that, which a lot of horror fans are kind of like, meh, they don't like. But actually, this has... I think this has, like, some really creepy scenes in it. It's really effective. Like, the characters are very likable and relatable. You actually care about what happens to them, even though it gets kind of crazy, like, especially near the end where she has to go through the fucking closet and ceiling and, like, the big monster face comes out of the closet and shit like that. Like, it seems kind of over the top, but for some reason I think it works. And it works because the family is so grounded in reality that when they see this shit and they're, like, disbelieving... it, you know, you relate to them so much that you're like, yeah, shit, man. That's pretty scary.
It was a movie of its time.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it in its time and liking it.
Yeah.
Because it did deliver things that audience had not seen yet. It had really good special effects for the time.
Yeah.
So you're seeing something you've never seen before for the very first time. You're like, wow.
Yeah.
I'm not buying it, but that sure was fucking cool looking.
Yeah. And like I said, the special effects still look pretty decent for today. I mean,
Back then, they were almost otherworldly. Although I still have to say that I think Ghostbusters 1 was a better movie.
I'd agree with you on that.
Yeah, because it offered a little bit more. It was more. It was like a bigger. It was in a bigger scope. It was taking place in a whole city.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of different characters. They were joking around. Some of them.
Yeah.
Their gods were involved. I thought it was pretty cool.
We're going to have to do a review on Ghostbusters. Because Ghostbusters
1 was good.
Easily one of my favorite movies.
Ghostbusters
2
was okay.
It was okay.
You could tell that they were really trying to recreate Ghostbusters 1. But how can you recreate that? They should have done something that was totally different. Now, there's supposed to be a Ghostbusters 3 coming out with the original cast.
I heard about that, and I saw a picture of Bill Murray with the Ghostbusters.
That could be done right if the story's good, and if it was, and you could maybe
Bring him out of retirement.
Yeah. Hey man, my wish was answered. My dream, you know, my wish was answered. I wanted Arnold to come back and do Conan. He's doing it.
Yeah.
Arnold's coming back to do Conan. I'm fucking ready, man. Because
he is so pumped, you guys.
I'm fucking pumped for fucking Conan. I hope it's King Conan, and I hope it's in the John Milius style of Conan 1, where he's now... It was supposed to be Milius wanted Conan 3 to be how the moral of the story was how to remain relevant as a warrior in your old age.
Yeah.
And that's really what that's what Arnold needs to be doing now. How do you remain relevant?
He's been doing a good job. He's been in some decent movies lately, I think.
But if you were an old warrior, how do you remain relevant? You know, that's what they should be. We'll see.
Well, that's what
supposedly it's going to be called. Hopefully, it's called King Conan. That was the proposed title going back years. They've been thinking about this movie for years.
Yeah.
It might be something. It might be Conan the Conqueror. I hope not. I hope it's just King Conan.
Even though it sounds a lot like King Kong, so they might not do that.
We'll see.
But yeah, so like I said, if you haven't seen Poltergeist, you know, come on. Where have you been? What have you been doing? I don't know all this time.
You got to see this one.
You really do. It seems like, particularly if you're going to do any kind of sweep of like the 80s horror, you got to see like the highlights of all the 80s. You got to see this one. Yes, it's a mainstream film. Yes, it's very Spielbergian. But
that's one of its strong points.
I think it's one of its strong points. Yeah, like I said, it's relatable to almost everybody. It actually has some really great, creepy, like iconic scenes in it.
Yeah,
and you know, it's so much a part of the cultural framework. You know, from fucking you only move the headstones. It's just like there's so many like references to this.
Yeah,
like in other media.
Right.
That you really need to see this.
Too. Yeah, and if you're a young listener and you've seen. You know, the new Bumblebee, and you liked that, you'd like this, too. It's not Transformers, it's Ghosts, you know, but it's that same tone.
Ghosts.
That same vibe.
Kid-eating trees and corpses it's and all cool, kind of fun shit.
It's pretty cool.
So, check it out if you haven't already. And, you know, if you have checked it, go watch it again.
It's good to see it again.
See if you like it as much as you liked it back in the 80s, because I certainly did.
Yeah, it's time capsule. You know, it takes you back to another era, and you go, I remember. Yeah, it was as cool as I remember it. Yeah.
Look at that kid's Star Wars toy.
Yeah.
Man. Look at, and Carol Ann's headboard, like the wicker or whatever the hell that was. Like that wicker white curly thing. I had one like that.
another one that took me back was RoboCop 1.
Yeah.
Seeing RoboCop 1, I was like, oh man, I remember when a badass apartment looked that way on the inside. You know, it's funny. Okay.
It is funny how much of my childhood, like, I remember in movies is like, we had that couch.
Yeah.
Like, I remember a lot of the furniture for some reason. More than the clothes and shit, even. Mm-hmm. I don't know. All right, so...
Furniture and decor.
Yeah. So that'll do it for our latest movie retrospective. Remember, if you like the show, like, share, subscribe on all your social media. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. If you don't like Patreon, you can go to our blog, 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And in the sidebar, there's a little button that says you can go to PayPal and make a donation. So you can do that if you would like to do that instead. And remember that our regular episodes come out every Tuesday. These here movie retrospectives come out every Friday. And 13 o'clock matinee, which is three new movies in the theater, comes out every Sunday. We will see you next time. Bye.